Welcome to the Oh For Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the struggles of working in the food industry so that you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, coach and facilitator, bringing you our expertise of starting a food brand and working in the food industry for the last 20 years. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working, to ultimately improve your career or business long term.
Hi everybody, and welcome to today's episode of Oh For Food's Sake. Today we are actually going to be talking about Amy's burnout story, which some of you have probably heard snippets of before. It's just such an incredibly powerful story. And it's I listened to Amy's full burnout story just the other night on a networking event that we did. And it gave me goosebumps. And it's a real moment of pause for yourself, because there's things that she describes that I think we've probably all felt at times. And this is just a really, really worthwhile subject to talk about. And it's a really brave thing for Amy to share with everybody. So huge thanks to Amy for sharing this with us. I'm not going to talk very much today because you can probably hear I'm croaky because I've got COVID at the moment. So I'm going to hand over to Amy to sort of take the reins for today's podcast.
Thanks, Lucy. And I'll just say we are recording remotely, so I'm not like, yes, you know, breaking COVID rules by being here, Lucy. And I'm glad you've been able to join me, Lucy, today, because we were thinking I was going to have to record on my own. So I'm glad you're feeling well enough today to come and record. But I did keep checking in to make sure that you really, really were well enough, which I'll come on to talk about the reasons why I did that. So, yeah, I wanted to talk about my burnout story, partly because it is the 10-year anniversary of my burnout and it feels like quite a big thing for me, but also because I've been talking about it more and more on social media, and I have been talking about it at networking events. I now do talks around it within businesses, and I've just been getting a massive response from people on how it has helped them to hear that story and notice those things in themselves. So vulnerable as it feels, you might hear my voice shake at times when I talk about it. I really wanted to share this story with all of you as listeners. So we are going back. And Lucy, do ask me questions if you want to. I know your voice isn't great. But so we're going back 10 years. And I think I've talked about before on the podcast that my career was not a linear path and I'd moved around quite a bit. And I was working as a commercial manager in prepared produce, which again, if anybody listening has worked in prepared produce knows that it is super, super fast moving and can be quite stressful. And if you think about all the supply issues that we're all now seeing because of COVID and Brexit and all of that, that was just the norm. That's like every single day is like that in produce. You know, it's a constant, constant stress. But I had moved into that commercial role a couple of years before this. And I think now looking back, I can see that there were elements of that that led to me burning out. And that was that pesky imposter syndrome that we've talked about in the past. So despite all the evidence that was telling me that I was doing a good job, so I was getting told I was doing a good job by my boss, I was definitely working a lot harder than some of the people around me. I think I said the other night, didn't I, Lucy, you know, I had this imposter syndrome thinking I wasn't doing as well as the other commercial managers, and they were sat in the corner of the office watching the tennis. It's like, hello. But the reality of that was what I did was I just kept working harder and harder and longer hours, because it was almost like wanting to prove myself and thinking that the only way to do that was to work harder and harder. Massive, massive perfectionist, wanting everything to be right. And at the same time, I was in a role that was split across the country. So on top of just the everyday stress of there's still a mobile phone ring that I hear now, that when I hear it, it like gives me that kind of stress response, because it's like, what now? Which pineapples are stuck where? And which bit of kit has broken down? You know, and I was getting calls at 6 a.m. 10 p.m. You know, it was like totally wired.
When you said that the other night, that really like took me back, and I thought, wow, you know, for that ringtone to have that impact on you still now,
yeah,
shows the level of stress that you must have been under at that time.
Yeah. So I was under a massive amount of stress. But the thing was, from the outside, everything was fine. You know, I had a very, very good mask at work.
And you're actually a swan.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, just getting on with it, legs going blah, 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 blah. And but nobody would have known. I was really good at managing the customer. You know, that whole, we've all been there when there's a customer visit and it's all, everything's going wrong, but you can just keep this game face on and, you know, reassure them that everything's fine. And I almost did that to the level of kidding myself that everything was fine.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. And I was, so, you know, I mentioned there was different factories. So I was traveling a lot. So I was either driving up and down the A1 or on the East Coast Main Line. You know, those were, I knew everybody, but on first name terms at the train stations, at the Premier Inn, you know, I spent very little downtime at home because I was either traveling or working pretty much.
How long were you in that role?
I was in the role for 5 years. So I worked in commercial for 5 years.
Yes, it's a long time. Because it's, I was just thinking that people do those sort of stints in roles, don't they? Where you're sort of covering long distances, or you might do it when you're at the start of a job where you're, you know, getting to know the different sites. And but to be doing something like that consistently for that length of time is a long time.
It's funny you should say that, actually, because when I think back, when I joined the business, I was in MPD and it was a dual-sited role. But I was pretty much told at the time that it will only be for 10 or 11 months that you'll have to move between the sites whilst you get, like you say, whilst I was getting the team up to speed and all of that. And that wasn't the reality. It was 7 years in total that I worked for that business. And for 7 years, I travelled up and down between those sites. So, you know, I think I didn't recognise at the time the toll that that was taking on me. Yeah. And, it, you know, people will, may have seen, like I've posted on social media about the times when I was in like peak stress. So the time when we couldn't get the watermelon to fit the pack, like it was all, you know, there's a scientific reason why it wouldn't happen, which I won't go into. But, you know, I ended up in tears in the fact, well, leaving the factory because I knew I was going to burst into tears in front of everybody in the factory. I didn't want to do that, and got in the car and drove in a rage because the factory manager was like, I think you need to take a break, Amy. And I just like really, really reacted, got in the car in this rage and drove for 3 hours. And it's like, that is not safe as a starting point, but also just that the toll of constantly being switched on, because that 3 hour drive would still have included phone calls, much as you're told not to do that. You know, you do that. So it was just this constantly being wired. But it was, you know, from the outside, everything was fine. And we won lots of business. So it was, we'd won a big contract from my old employer, which had, you know, was felt good in some ways. And we transferred all that business and we had all the stuff that goes with that. You know, it wasn't plain sailing, because it never is. And it was like full on crisis mode for the first 3 months. It was like daily calls with Sainsbury's on, you know, where we were with supply and all of that sort of stuff was going on. But that was just work. And that's the thing, is it's never just about work, because outside of work, I was also putting myself under masses of pressure. So I just bought a brand new big shiny house, and it was, you know, it was the dream house. It was where I've always wanted to live. But with that came a big mortgage and the pressure to keep earning that money. So you know, what's going on in my head is, well, I've got to work this hard. Mm. I have to work this hard to earn this much money, because my partner at the time was retraining, so he wasn't earning very much. And it just felt like that, all that pressure was on me. And then I was also getting married. We were getting married. So anybody that's got married will know what that pressure feels like, you know. Yeah. So just all the arranging and all of that sort of stuff. But I was also going to the gym 5 or 6 times a week, because I was desperate to get in the wedding dress that I wanted to. And I, you know, I'd bought one that was a size too small, as you do, you know, I can squeeze into this. So I was restricting what I was eating and I was effectively over exercising. So I was putting my body under masses of stress and I lost loads of weight, ended up putting a lace up back in the dress because of what then happened. But, you know, I think we can often feel like we are our work self or we're our home self, and we're not. We're just one human being. And I was a human being trying to juggle all of these things, and it was a lot.
I feel completely exhausted just listening to the story. Like, I can feel the amount of energy that was required, and the like, all the thoughts of home and work and getting married and going to the gym, and you know, it's and you do get in that cycle.
Yeah.
And it's impossible. It's like a hamster wheel where you've just got to keep going. You've got to keep going.
Yeah. And I didn't feel like I could get off it. And it wasn't all, you know, it sounds like it was all like really stressful. It wasn't all, that's the thing. It wasn't all negative stress to a point, you know, arranging a wedding is fun. I enjoyed going to the gym. I was a social butterfly. I was in my early 30s. I still had energy to go out and do things. But also I would, you know, I'd bought this big new shiny house and I loved cooking. Yeah. So we were always having barbecues. We were always having people over. And I thought it was completely normal to be busy 6 nights a week and for lunch on Saturday and Sunday. Like, that was just, looking back, I'd learned that, you know, my mum likes to be busy. We're a family that was always really busy. Yeah. But it, like you say, that hamster wheel just got too much. I was thriving on it until I wasn't anymore. So you kind of got this picture, haven't you? Like, all of this stuff going on, good stuff, scary stuff, stressful stuff. Yeah. And there started to be physical signs. This is where my voice starts to go, because I'm like remembering how awful it got. I started getting physical signs that the stress was getting too much. So the first thing that I started to notice was ice pick headaches, which I didn't know were called that, but the doctors since told me. And it literally felt like somebody hitting you in the back of your head with an ice pick. Now, that's quite a big, strong warning sign from your body that something's up. And I did listen to it because I had to. I didn't have any choice, really. So what would happen would be, that would happen and I'd just like have to phone my boss and just be like, I'm going home. I just need to go to bed. He was absolutely fine, completely supportive. But I'd get home, I'd get in bed, you know, take some strong painkillers, take my laptop to bed with me, because didn't think that work could possibly cope without me. And it all, you know, and then I'd be fine again the next day and I'd just get back into work.
So when you said this the other night, I wanted to ask this question. Did you find out much later that they were described as ice pick headaches, or did you go to the doctors at the time and they described it? And did they say this is like it's a common stress related type headache? Or
I can't remember, because it all gets all blurred into one, whether I did. I don't think I did before the burnout day, as I call it. I don't think I had been to the doctor. I may well have been, but I guess what matters is I just pushed through. You know, that's what mattered, was that I wasn't listening to it. And I don't think I was told that it was stress related. It was just, you know, some people get them that it wasn't like, you need to slow down because you're getting these ice pick headaches, for sure. Yeah. I wasn't told that.
Because we can make excuses for stuff, can't we, for headaches? Like, oh, it's hormonal, or I'm tired, or, you know,
I haven't drunk enough, or, all of those things. So, so I kept ignoring it. So this was 10 years ago. So it was January. So it was that post Christmas, you know, like we're all feet or recording this in January. Yeah, so it's that feeling of, I don't know if I'm generalizing here, but women don't really get a break at Christmas. You know, we'd had a bit of time off, but actually I'd worked between Christmas and New Year. I'd entertained, I'd had like 10 people over for Christmas lunch and all of that. Got back to work in the January, and it's like really, really hard.
Slog, doesn't it?
Yeah.
And January is a slog.
Yeah. And to get up and go to the management meetings that were on a Monday morning in Newcastle, I had to leave the house at 5 a.m. So it's dark for the first 3 hours, basically for the whole journey up.
It makes
there.
It harder. That drive makes that drive harder.
You know, and you're having to concentrate more. Yeah. And you know, I talked about the ice pick headaches, but you know, when you run down and you just catch everything, I was always catching colds and whatever. So one weekend in January, I got this really, really bad head cold. And it was so bad again that I couldn't ignore it, couldn't push through like I normally would. I had to put a scarf around my head because, you know, like when it's really cold and hurts, it was like that. So like 48 hours or maybe a little bit more of lying on the sofa, feeling sorry for myself. But I woke up on the Monday morning and it had gone. So rather than thinking, well, you know, maybe just give yourself a day of recovery, Amy, I got in the car at 5 a.m. and I drove to Newcastle because I just thought, you know, work can't cope without me. Just this whole like total inflated self-image here that work can cope without me.
But it's not that, is it? It's if you're the same as me, I feel like it's the expectation as well. You know, people will be expecting me to be there. You know, I'm better, I can do it. So I should be there. I should be doing this.
Yeah. And I think it's that perfectionist nature as well inside of wanting to do a good job, and definitely the imposter syndrome of, if I'm not there, they're going to think I can't do my job properly.
Yeah.
You know, I need to be there to say whatever I needed to say in the management meeting. So I got up and I drove up there. And honestly, the rest of that week, I don't really remember much about. I think I just got through the week on adrenaline, but I was exhausted. And, you know, would have got home on the Friday night. I haven't mentioned as well when I was away, I often used to sink a bottle of wine a night when I was away. It makes me sound like an alkie, but you know, that was part of the coping mechanism. And you just think it's another layer of stress going into my body at the time. And I'd have got home on the Friday and had a glass of wine and maybe it'd have turned into a bottle. But I woke up on the Saturday morning and I literally couldn't move. Like when I say I can't move, I think people think it's like I didn't have the motivation, you know, I can't be bothered to move. Yeah. No, I physically could not move my limbs. And
That's so scary.
Yeah, it was really scary. It felt like somebody was like pinning me down on the bed. So yeah, it was really, really scary. And like I got to the point where I could crawl to the toilet, but you know, that's not.
What were you thinking? Because I'm thinking like, you know, that is so terrifying. Did you consider calling an ambulance? What was going through your mind at this point?
Yeah, well, it's hard to remember in detail because a big part of it was like having a foggy brain as well.
Yeah.
But I remember being terrified and think like it sounds melodramatic now, but I actually thought I was dying. Like, because you would, you just feel like your body's switching down. And we didn't phone an ambulance, but we would have phoned the doctors on the Monday morning. And then what happened was that I had to stay in bed for a couple of weeks and I started to feel a little bit better. And, you know, but there was all sorts of symptoms going on. Like I talk about not being able to move, but I had like this buzzing in my leg. I used to say it was like ants crawling in my legs, and like I couldn't stand light. I couldn't stand sound. You know, the fatigue was just unbelievable. Like I could just sleep all day. It's not tiredness. Like it's very hard to describe to people the difference between tiredness and fatigue, but it is, you know, and I still suffer with a hangover from it that now, which I'll talk about. And I still, you know, have to have that conversation with my partner now where it's like, no, I'm not tired. This is fatigue. It's different. And when it's fatigue, I just have to go and lie down. Mm. And that was another thing, like just having to be horizontal. So even once I could sit up, I would be sitting up and it's just like, I've just got to be horizontal. Like you can't explain it, but your body's just telling you need to lie down. So I did speak to doctors about it, and they, to start with, were giving me very, very different advice depending on which doctor I spoke to. It was, you know, you need to rest. And then there was other doctors that said, you need to, you've rested long enough now, it's been 10 days or whatever, you need to go and push yourself and get to the gym because, you know, you're just going to get more and more lethargic if you do nothing. So which one do you think I listened to, Lucy?
Ooh, the gym one, maybe?
Yeah. So I did. And, you know, I went back to the gym and it was terrible. You know, like I used to be able to run so far and then I could only like run for a minute or whatever it was. It was like, it felt like the end of the world. But I kept pushing through and I did eventually manage to get back to work. But the reality was that over the next 18. So that for me was like the burnout day. That was the event. That was the start, really, rather than the end of the story, which I know we're 20 minutes in, so I won't talk for that much longer. But it was 18 months of battling against that. So I was finding that I could just about get to work and I could get through a day and I could do it on adrenaline and I could plaster a load of makeup on, but I was getting symptoms like the brain fog and that sort of thing. And when I got home from work, it was literally like, get home, eat dinner, get into bed.
And did it make you more, so had it scared you to the point where you were like, right, now I really need to rest now?
It did, but only to the point where I would rest so that I could work. Because remember those mind monkeys that I had going on telling me, well, it wasn't just mind monkeys. It was the reality that I had a massive mortgage to pay.
Yeah.
I couldn't risk going off sick for any length of time or being seen to not be able to do my job. So job became the total priority.
So you felt like you'd had this event, but you'd recovered. So you were carrying on. You were going back, but you were trying to be a bit more mindful of resting so you could work.
Yeah, which actually just meant reducing the amount of social events I did. Like the priority was never
balanced.
About balancing and I still need a bit of joy in my life and I still need to see my friends. It was, I'm just going to cut off all contact with everybody and because I just don't have time and I just need to go to bed as soon as I get home.
Yeah.
And then, so that would happen. So I'd have a few weeks where I would be fine. I mean, that's not fine, is it? It's not a life, but I thought it was fine, you know, because I was getting through it. And then I would just, it would just hit me again because it's almost like your body's going, it's like, I'm tapping you on the shoulder, telling you you need to slow down and you're not listening. So I'm going to start getting you with that ice pick. And then it was the next thing and the next thing. And then I'd just be like, nope, I can't get out of bed today. Mm. And often like whole weekends spent in bed. But in the week, you know, work were understanding to a point. I was remote anyway because of working between two sites. So I worked from home a bit anyway, which was unusual 10 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, working from home became working from bed. And then it got to the point where if I was having a customer meeting and needing to go down to London, I would need to spend the whole day in bed the day before and the day after just to be able to perform for that hour or 2 hour meeting in London.
And did anybody at work know that? Or were you doing a good job of, you know, the swan?
I did work knew about elements of it. They definitely knew. There was actually that summer, I basically worked from home most of the summer and my boss was really understanding, was just effectively telling me to get the bare minimum done. You know, it was fine. Yeah. Like, so they were supportive from that point of view. But I guess that was like my boss. What I didn't ever do, which I've learned since and have been much better at doing, was telling my peers and my colleagues around me.
Yeah.
Because they didn't know to make adjustments for that because I was just, you know, I couldn't possibly let the mask down.
Yeah.
Lucy, Little Miss Perfect couldn't be anything less than perfect. It's all coming out now, isn't it? Why all of the past episodes, why they have been.
All makes sense now why we're doing the podcast.
So, and I've talked about this before, but the pivotal moment in my head is going down to a Sainsbury's meeting and having to do everything that I said, but then after the meeting, having to lie down in the taxi because my body was doing that. I've got to lie down and you've got to, you know, I've got to put headphones on. I've got to lie down, having to keep my eyes shut. And I just thought, what the hell are you doing, Amy? Mm. And then what happened was I got a new boss. And I don't know if it's coincidental now thinking about it or not, but she was female, slightly more empathetic. And actually looking back at the time, I really resented her for calling me out on everything, you know, like she's pushed me into this corner. But
she saw through your mask.
Yeah, she saw through the mask.
Which you needed someone to.
Yeah, and I needed a bit of tough love. And what she did was she said to me, Amy, you know, just take this week off. And, you know, like paid leave or whatever, and really have a think about what you want you know, in life and what's going to be right for you, because you can't keep yo-yoing back in and out of work like you are doing. And I took that week off, and honestly, because I was forced to stop, it was unbelievable in terms of the realization of how physically unwell I was as a result of the stress that I'd been through. So, you know, I talked about the crawling ants in my legs. I'd got tinnitus in my ears. So I literally couldn't, like, it was like go and sit in the garden. I couldn't sit in the garden because without putting some music on or something to drown out the tinnitus that was going on. And, you know, this severe fatigue that I'd just been pushing through and pushing to one side. And it really scared the hell out of me. Like, I realized just how poorly I was. And I spent that week doing a lot of self-reflection and journaling and all the stuff I talk about now. And I went to my happy place, right in the water, and spent a day there, spending that time in nature and just getting a bit of perspective. And it was like, Amy, enough is enough. And so I went back to work and agreed with them that I would take off the maximum sick leave time that they would pay me for, which was 3 months. And I handed over. So we had like a 2 week handover, and I handed over all of my accounts and everything to another commercial manager.
And how did that feel, having sort of been on the journey that you had been on? Was it a hard thing for you to do, or had you got to the point where it was actually a good thing? You could feel like it was a relief.
I wish I could say it felt like a relief. It felt like a massive failure. It really did feel like a massive failure. There was a feeling of failure, a feeling of shame. You know, I don't have those feelings anymore, but at the time, that's, you know, that was the reality. And that's why I got to the state that I was because I felt like I had to have this mask, and I had to, you know, it was shameful to not be able to cope. And yeah, so I had that 3 months off, and that was really starting this almost, it was a physical and mental recovery. So I had a health coach that helped me with how to put the right nutrients in my body, because I'd been following, you know, some stupid fad diet, and like I'd been starving myself, and I needed to like get back into that, which, you know, again, I'm ashamed of. I've got a nutrition degree. I know what I should be putting in my body, but I needed help with that stuff. And, you know, doing gentle exercise and not pounding myself in the gym. You know, I've barely been to the gym ever since. And, you know, I still miss that, but I recognize that my body has needed a long time to heal from that stuff. And I've also had lots of therapy and coaching and stuff to understand what was going on in my brain and why the stress became too much for me. So I started that all in that 3 months that I had off. And then I went back 3 months later, and actually a week before I was going back, my then husband left me as well. So I was already in this like massive, massive low, and I don't really talk about it much, but you know, it was too much for him. You know, by this point I had been diagnosed with, they first of all diagnosed post-viral fatigue, which is what people are now being diagnosed with as long COVID. And then it was latterly a diagnosis of chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia. And it just made such a massive shift in our lives, having gone from being these like party animals. When I say party animals, I don't mean like we were out drinking and whatever, but we entertained all the time. You know, our lifestyle completely changed. And, you know, it didn't suit my husband and he left, you know, so I was at my lowest low, and then that happened. But when I went back to work, I took the decision to take a sidestep into, well, it was actually a step down in terms of grading and all of that, into category management, because I just realized that that job in commercial didn't suit me. The day-to-day stress of where the hell is that pineapple container, and that horrible ringtone was not what I wanted.
Yeah. I mean, you didn't want to go back to what you had come from. No. So you needed to make a change.
Yeah. And actually, it was definitely the right change for me. And I absolutely loved working in category and marketing. So, you know, with that wonderful thing of hindsight, everything happens for a reason and all of that. But at the time, it feels pretty crappy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And at that point, it's, you know, that's kind of where my recovery journey started. And, you know, we're 10 years later, and it hasn't taken a full 10 years. It probably took me a couple of years to recover physically and mentally. And, you know, I moved companies because I felt the shame. I felt two things. I felt the shame of everybody knowing what had happened to me. And that was including the, you know, I'd got married and divorced when I was working there. So there's always shame attached to that, but also like not being good enough to be a commercial manager is what I was telling myself. And that again was never the truth, but also the pull of the business. They wanted me to go back into that role. You know, they could see that I was working at a level that wasn't, you know, I wasn't fulfilling my potential at work, and I wasn't ready for it. And actually I didn't want to go back into commercial. So yeah. I moved businesses, and then that's when I learned all sorts. And when I went into that business, I went in with a mask to start with. For the first 3 months, there was this whole mask. I told them at interview about the chronic illness and the fact that I needed to leave work on time and all of those boundaries. So my immediate boss knew, but I didn't tell everybody else. And it was quickly I think I got a fatigue, like you get like little relapses all the time. I don't get them very often anymore, but I did quite a bit at the start. I realized quite quickly that I was going to have to take off this mask and I was going to have to tell my colleagues about it. So, you know, the site at Spalding that I was at, it was a big site. And one of the things was, if I had to walk across from the building where marketing was to the salad building that was a long way away, by the time I'd got there, I was starting to get symptoms because it was, and it's not actually that far, you know, for a normal person, but it was for me. So I had to have those conversations with people and say, actually, we need to have the meetings in the building that I'm in because I need these adjustments. Like that would have been, you know, the few years before, there's no way I'd have been as vulnerable as to tell people that. So I think that's been the start of the journey of recovery, has been to take off the mask and not have to be so blooming perfect all the time.
And open yourself to people, because I bet you developed much better relationships with people very quickly.
Yeah.
By being open and honest and the authentic you, because it just cuts out a lot of crap, doesn't it, basically? Yeah.
And it helped as well within the marketing team. I became a bit of a mentor and effectively a coach for people, because they knew they could come to me about that stuff because they'd, you know, because I talked about it openly. So again, everything happens for a reason, and I've ended up, you know, doing it as a profession.
Yeah, and it does.
And that's why I'm so passionate now about sharing this stuff so openly. And I get questioned about it, like my members of my family don't like me talking about it because it's a generational thing, isn't it? It's like, why do you have to keep talking about it? You know, it happened, you know, it's a little bit of that shame coming through. And why can't you just be positive about it? And I am positive, you know, positive stuff has come out of it, but it needs to be talked about, because working in the food industry can be flipping hard work. Yeah. And there's a lot of people that are really stressed out there, and we can't bury our heads in the sand and pretend it's not happening.
No, because what was happening to you could have been nipped in the bud much earlier before.
Yeah.
If conversations were had and you were able to open up, and, you know, there's loads of reasons why you couldn't do that. And I completely get that. But I think, you know, that's why we came together, isn't it, actually? Because we both, you know, my story is very different to yours, but there's things within your story that really resonate with me. Like when that Sainsbury's meeting you had, just completely coincidentally, I had a Sainsbury's meeting, which was a bit of a light bulb moment for me. Because I kept getting these recurrent eye infections.
Yes.
And I had this like really poignant meeting with Sainsbury's, and I had a very newborn baby, and I'd dragged myself down for this meeting, and I had this horrendous eye infection. And I had that moment with myself, like, Lucy, what are you doing? And I think, you know, we all have these experiences. And, you know, when we first caught up, this time last year, which I still can't believe it was only this time last year, you know, this is why we wanted to share our stories and be really open about the hard work and the efforts and the stress that go on in this industry. Because I think being able to talk about it and share makes it more normal and enables conversations, because by doing that, we're going to create better workplaces and happier people, and where you can be more efficient. And you can, you know, I've got COVID at the moment, and yesterday there's no way I was going to be able to do anything. And we sort of said, you know, what should we do about the podcast recordings today? And I did let myself completely rest.
Mm.
And it's so useful having you as a friend, because you are always texting me being like, make sure you're resting, make sure you're drinking, make sure. And I'm like, yes, I will, I will.
But it's that awareness of those things. And I think it's so easy to forget, isn't it? And it's so easy to put everybody else's needs ahead of your own and to put work ahead of your own health. But, you know, nothing is more important than your health.
Yeah.
Like, if we'd had to, and we had to skip a week, didn't we, before Christmas, because our producer got COVID. And it's like, it's fine. Like, it doesn't matter. It's not the end of the world.
No. And there is always a solution, and there is always a way around these things. And it's such an easy thing to say, isn't it? And when last week, I said to you yesterday, didn't I, Amy, that and having that enforced break yesterday has done me the world of good. I was so stressed last week because my daughter had COVID, my mum had COVID. And so I was having to look after Bella and sort stuff out for my mum. And I was so stressed because I just felt like I'm not going to be able to get everything done that I need to get done. And then yesterday I had to completely stop.
Yeah. And then you realise that none of it actually matters.
No. And actually it's fine. And everything will work out and it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
So yeah, for anybody who needs to hear that today, and if you're in that situation, it's going to be all right. Just take a deep breath. Do some deep breathing.
And I do think, you know, when you're in that state of feeling, you know, like I was saying, I didn't feel like anybody else could do it. And I was just like, just so busy and just had to keep doing. If you're feeling that overwhelmed, the last thing you need to do is do more. You need to do less, you know, and I still battle with it. You know, I think there are certain personality types that are more prone to burnout, and I still have to keep on top of it. You know, I have to keep it front of mind all the time and have people around me that keep me accountable, because I can easily spiral into that behaviour again. But, you know, it's recognising that, it's learning what the signs are in yourself and recognising when they're happening, and they like having a trigger to go, okay, what I really need to do is put the laptop away, put the phone away,
step
and do
back.
So we've talked for ages, and I'm always conscious of not just talking about the negative things and you know, all the crap that happened, because obviously I have learned things from it. And I think I want to share with you kind of the things that I'd wish I'd known back then that I know now, and kind of in a work context as well, was that the first thing is that I thought for a long time, to be a good leader or a good manager, you needed to just be able to do everything and know how to do everything and do everything. But actually, being a good leader is more about empowering others and not getting involved in all that day-to-day detail. I forgot to mention how I used to just like do the technical specs and stuff because I knew how to
it.
Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And also,
that's like an unbelievable little snippet of information. So you should, let's just clarify that. So when Amy was a commercial manager, to ensure she met a deadline, she did the specs. So Amy, the commercial manager, is writing the specs.
Because I knew how to do it, because I'd worked in technical, and the technical manager said they didn't have time. Like, it is bonkers. Like, what was I thinking? But and I thought that I was doing, that was me doing a good job, because it was delivering for Sainsbury's.
We've all done little bits of that. But again, I think it's the size of that task. If anybody's worked, you know, we all know like the specs are a nightmare. I know it was, and you qualified it the other night by saying it was only fruit. So, you know, it's like, well,
it wasn't
still
my responsibility.
You shouldn't have been doing specs. You've already got a full-time job.
So don't do that. Tip number one, don't do that. Don't try and do everything. Don't, you know, don't paper over the cracks of other departments if they're not doing their job properly. Don't just take on more and more and more, because, you know, it doesn't end well. But the other one is, you know, being a feeling like finding out who the people are that you can trust at work, to have a safe little vent to. So, you know, I got to the point where I was crying in the factory because I hadn't been able to admit to anybody. I had lots of people that liked me and I got on well with them, but I didn't have anybody that I felt that I could have that little vent to. And I think sometimes we think we can't do that, and it is important to be able to let off a bit of steam. So have someone that you can have a little bitch and moan about what's going on and tell them how you're feeling. And then, you know, it's a lot safer way of doing that than letting it build up and end up in tears or driving like a maniac down the A1. And I think also that noticing when you're stopping yourself asking for help and knowing that asking for help is a strength, not a weakness. Mm. And that can be, you know, that's talked about in the mental health space all the time, but it doesn't need to just be because you're feeling the strain mentally. It's like workload wise. It does not make you incapable of doing your job if you don't have the capacity to do it. Actually, a good, strong leader will say, I don't have the resources to do this properly. They won't just paper over the cracks and work till midnight. You've got to start asking for help.
I know we've been talking for ages, but I just want to also say something. When we were talking about the specs and the fact that you already had a full-time job, it made me think about when I was doing podology in a startup environment. This is also really relevant because you put so much pressure on yourself because there isn't really anybody else sometimes that you can turn to. But I think it's about understanding when you need to look at outsourcing and really mm-hmm. thinking about what you should be doing and the fact that there are only 24 hours in a day and you need to sleep some of those 24 hours. So whatever your situation
and you
need is.
You can't just work and sleep, Lucy. Don't forget the balance, the other things.
Yes.
Because I think, and making sure that those other things are things that you truly do enjoy. Because I think actually cooking for everybody else and you know, as everybody's agony aunt and CV writer and all of those things,
that's not a hobby for you.
No. So we have talked for much longer than we had planned to.
But it's such a brilliant topic, you know, and I mean that in the sense of it's so important to talk about. And your story is so powerful and shocking.
Mm.
And I, you know, I'm so grateful that you're so confident and able to share it, because I think it's so important. And it's a really valuable lesson, I think, for so many here.
And I always in the resilience workshops that I do with teams, I always start with this story because it does, you know, it grabs people's attention and it makes them realize that, you know, it happens to normal people. It doesn't just happen to, you know, some faceless person. It's people, and it happens in our industry and it doesn't get talked about. And what that really does do is help those teams then open up the conversation. They know they can trust me. I'm not some wellness guru that's telling them to do stuff. You know, I get the reality of working in food. Yeah. It is hard work. And, you know, and that's why, like you say, I don't know if enjoy is the right word, but I am happy to share my story, you know, like I do the talks and stuff that I do, because it just starts to normalize it and make it easier for teams to talk about this stuff, and it stops teams burning out. So which ultimately means they can do their jobs, which ultimately is good for the business. So
exactly.
So if you are interested in me running a resilience workshop for your teams or doing one of those talks, do get in touch with me on LinkedIn, because I just want to spread the word and help as many people as I possibly can.
And it's really impactful. It really is. So thank you very much, Amy, for sharing that story. I'm going to have to do a Lucy episode of some sort, I think.
Definitely. All right. Thank you, everyone. And, you know, we will carry on the conversation in the Facebook group. But if you are feeling any of this stuff and want some support, just do reach out to me and I will do whatever I can to help you.
Thanks, Amy. Thanks, everybody, and we will see you next week.
See you next week.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you've enjoyed it. Take care and catch us next week.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and is able to offer a free discovery call. Find her on Instagram at OutToLaunchMPD or over on LinkedIn.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any coaching or facilitation support, then you can find her at Amy Wilkinson Coaching on Facebook, Instagram or LinkedIn. Thanks again. I'm Lucy.
And I'm Amy.
See you next time.